Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great start to your week, wherever and however you may be listening to us across our great country or our great land. My name is Will Highland, and I'm recording on Monday, April 29th, 2024. It's a late one, but we'll get it in under the gun on Monday, as I try and always do. That said, we have a ton of things to talk about. This is like, I say this every time, it's becoming a broken record, but really, as I was writing down the notes for this evening's episode and this week's early pod, I couldn't help but think that, you know, we're running like a three-legged race right now in the sports world. Remember when, you know, you'd have those field days or those carnivals when you were younger, and I don't even know if kids under the age of like 15 have ever done this these days. It's probably too dangerous, but we used to do like three-legged races where you would have like a bean sack or like a hay sack or something weird like that. You'd be standing next to a partner, you'd each stick one leg in there, and then you'd each have one leg left over and you'd try and run. That's what trying to be caught up with all of this sports news over the last like 3 weeks has been like for me. Not only am I busy in my personal and professional life, but trying to keep up with the NFL draft drama, which has concluded, the NBA and NHL playoffs, the beginning of the Major League Baseball season, all these big golf events, the Premier League run-in, all the college sports. March Madness ended about a month ago, but you get my drift. Like, it's just been wild. Plus, you know, there's been talk of things from expansion in certain leagues, relocation of the Arizona Coyotes in the NHL. So there's been off the field stuff, and it's been wild. But where I want to begin is where I think a lot of people are expecting me to begin, and that's with the NFL draft. So my last pod didn't do so well with listenership, maybe because it was released on the day of the draft and not a lot of people, you know, were tuned into mock drafts that late in the process. But one thing I mentioned back on that pod was that I expected the New England Patriots to draft Drake May at 3rd overall. In my original mock draft about 5 weeks ago, I thought, oh, well, maybe they'll trade back. There's been rumors that either the Minnesota Vikings or the New York Giants were trying to trade up into that spot, seemingly to get Drake May. But ultimately, New England stood pat and decided to draft May at 3rd overall. May, of course, being the standout from the UNC Tar Heels. As I said, I thought they might have traded back, but as time went on and we got to Thursday, I thought it's becoming more and more apparent to me that the New England Patriots will draft Drake May at 3. So that was something that was popular around these parts to talk about for the last few weeks. But beyond that, you had the Bears surprised no one by drafting Caleb Williams, number 1 overall. Number 2, Jaden Daniels went to the Washington Commanders. And then you had, I believe at 4, Marvin Harrison Jr. went to the Arizona Cardinals. So there were a lot of big names off the board early. You know, you saw a lot of receivers be taken early. You had Joe Alt, who I believe to be the best non-skill player available, which is weird because, I mean, to me, every skill or every position in football is a skill position, but he was a tackle. The Chargers grabbed him at 5. The New York Giants went up and got Malik Nabers. Tennessee stuck with a tackle. I think J.C. Latham was also very good. But the big surprise came at 8 when the Atlanta Falcons went and drafted Michael Penix Jr. Now, this you've probably heard of already, perplexing. I know a lot of people like to pile on Atlanta, the sort of the 28-3, laughing at them for this pick or that pick or drafting Kyle Pitts 4 overall. But this is like another one of those situations where the Atlanta Falcons are drafting in the top 10 and you kind of leave with a little bit of a head scratcher. Because as much as I like Michael Penix Jr., I never really saw him as a top 10 guy. There's a big injury history there. And there's also you know, some work that needs to be done with his mechanics and stuff, I think, in order for him to be an elite or at least a really strong passer. But, you know, I look around and I still think that the pick will benefit the team that was going to take him, even if it wasn't in the top 10, or even if it was in the top 10, it wasn't going to be a horrible pick, because I think there's potential there, and potential is really what the NFL draft is all about. The weird thing, though, and this is what everybody probably knows, so I'm not breaking any news, is that the Atlanta Falcons had Kirk Cousins under contract. They were ready to go from sort of this meddling group of nobodies that had existed post Matt Ryan into a situation where they were going to try and maximize the talent they had. They had drafted a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. They had invested in that. And this is what I think their plan was in a weak division. The Saints aren't that good. The Panthers aren't that good. And the other best team in that division is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are kind of aging and nobody really knows how good they're going to be. They'll probably win the division, but the Atlanta Falcons kind of had a roadmap in front of them. You know, for example, in 2021, they drafted Kyle Pitts 4 overall, ahead of Ja'Marr Chase, Jalen Waddle, and Penei Sewell. The rest of that draft is awesome. I mean, everyone talks about the quarterbacks in that draft, but they passed on Devonta Smith. They passed on Patrick Surtain II. They passed on Jalen Waddle and Ja'Marr Chase and Micah Parsons and Rashawn Slater, who's a great offensive tackle out of Northwestern who plays for the Chargers. They did all of this in order for them to go and get a tight end who just hasn't produced, right? So I'm wondering, not only did they whiff on that draft, in 2022, the Atlanta Falcons drafted, let's find them, they drafted Drake London at 8, and I don't really think anyone is, like, super excited about Drake London. I'm not. And then last year, they drafted 8th overall again, and they got Bijan. So maybe, I mean, their first-round picks have all been offense. They have brought in defensive talent. But their first-round picks have all been offense, and then they went right back to the well for Michael Penix Jr. I would have been okay with the London, the Robinson, and Pitts, and then you go get Kirk Cousins, and then this year, instead of going and getting Michael Penix, you had the pick of the litter. You know, Rome Odunze was still on the board. Olufoshanu was still on the board. Brock Bowers was still on the board if you wanted to go get another tight end. And then you had the DN from UCLA, who I can't pronounce his name, but there was a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball too. Seattle went and got Byron Murphy from Texas. Dallas Turner went to the Vikings. They just had a lot there to pick from, and instead they went the Penix route. And Penix is already an older player, and now he's gonna what, sit behind Kirk Cousins? Like, I know, again, everyone piles on the Atlanta Falcons. And sometimes I don't really always think that's fair, but holy crap, what are you going to do here? You know, like, you're in a horrible division. The Saints, right now, their quarterback room is Spencer Rattler and Derek Carr, not exactly inspiring confidence. You already had the best quarterback in the division now. I think Kirk Cousins better than the rest of three of those guys. He's better than Bryce Young, he's better than Baker, and he's better than Derek Carr. So you already had the best quarterback in your division. Your division smells. So why aren't you building around and maximizing the Kirk Cousins window? That's what the Vikings tried to do. It got them to the playoffs a few times. But whether it's the Vikings or the Falcons, they kind of have that, both franchises kind of have that choke gene. And it seems like the Falcons sort of choked in the draft. And I don't mean to pile on, but that seems to be what's happening. So then at 9, the Bears take Rome Odunze. I like that. I think the Bears are solid. You know, I think the Bears have a wide open shot at that division. I mean, I'm not in love with Green Bay. I'm not in love with Love still. And, you know, they made the playoffs last year. Congratulations, the NFC was trash. I think the Vikings are clearly, you know, stuck in the middle here with Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy. You know, that's sort of a project. They still got the best skill player in the NFL and Justin Jefferson, but that's a little bit of a project. And then the Lions, they're going to have huge expectations, but I don't know if they're going to be able to replicate it. So, I mean, the lane is there for the Chicago Bears. The big question is Caleb Williams, can he, you know, is he going to materialize in year one? We'll have to wait and see. At 10, I'm not going to go through everybody, but I'm just going to kind of hit the highlights of the first round, and then I'll focus on everything as a whole here. The Jets with getting their tackle at 11 was solid for them. They need that. Protect Aaron Rodgers at all costs. They should have done this years ago. But at 10, the Vikings got J.J. McCarthy. Now, the Vikings are a solid team, but their quarterback position was definitely a need once Kirk went to Atlanta. And look, J.J., I think it will work. You know, they traded up one spot to get him. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe they thought Denver was going to get him, but they were still picking ahead of Denver. That's weird to me. There must be some sort of salary cap reason for top 10 picks, yada, yada, yada. I don't really know. It was just weird. It was just weird that they traded up one spot. It wasn't like the Jets. I don't think the Jets were going to go get J.J. McCarthy. Maybe they really thought the Jets were going to do that, but I mean, either way, Jets clearly didn't care. They weren't drafting a quarterback. So, J.J., we'll see if he's an NFL quarterback. I've made my thoughts on him pretty clear. At 12, Broncos get Bo Nix. I like that. Bo Nix, solid. I'm a Bo Nix believer. Maybe I'll eat my words there someday. Raiders getting Brock Bowers. I like that. So, a lot of offensive players. The rest of the draft sort of fell into place. Green Bay getting a tackle. You know, they want to protect Love. The Chiefs getting Xavier Worthy, who I think is outside of Thomas, Neighbors, and Marvin Harrison. There's a reason why he's in that conversation. I personally, you know, see him closer to the pack with, you know, Roma Dunze and Neighbors and Thomas and all those guys. But, you know, he fell all the way down to 28, and the Chiefs are going to get him. I'll talk more about the Chiefs in a second. You know, and the Pittsburgh Steelers getting their tackle at 20 was huge. I think Pittsburgh is going to be scary running the ball with Najee Harris and whatnot. But anyway, the Patriots specifically, I'll get to them, and then I'll touch on the Chiefs here in a second to round out the NFL talk. The Patriots went and they got Jalen Polk at 37 out of Washington. Solid receiver. I don't really think he's going to be a groundbreaker. To me, I see him more as a possession guy, which is important. They were missing that last year and with the absence of Jacoby Myers. I don't love the pick. I think Patriots fans are like, oh, I'm all in on Jalen Polk because I saw his highlight tape. That's not really me right now. Like, I think it's solid. I think they needed a receiver. It sounds like they would have preferred Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett, or Ladd McConkey, and that they were trying to trade up for one of those guys. And that they kind of had to sell for Polk. If that's the case, I would have rather they went and grabbed a guard like Jackson Powers Johnson, or maybe a corner, you know, like Kool-Aid McKinstry or Cooper DeJean, which was also a position of need there. There were also tight ends available. You know, A.D. Mitchell dropped all the way to 52. So maybe you could have grabbed him if you had traded up from 64. Or sorry, 68. But there was a lot that sort of happened there in a few hours on Saturday afternoon. The Chiefs, though, they go and get Kingsley Sudomataia, if I believe I'm saying his name right, from BYU. That guy's a stud, right? Like the teams right now, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Bengals, like they all had good drafts. But I think the Chiefs had a really good draft. Because they get this tackle out of BYU. They get their receiver, Xavier Leggett. Xavier Worthy. I'm getting Xavier Worthy and Xavier Leggett mixed up. Sorry. It's two Xaviers. They get Xavier Worthy out of Texas. Solid. They traded up for him. The Bills made that trade with them. And, you know, the Chiefs are just building. And we're going to talk about them more in a second when we get down to the 100s in the third round. Because this is where I think the Patriots sort of worried me a little. All right? They go get Laydon Robinson, a guard at 103. I like that. They needed a guard. I think this kid's out of Texas A&M is solid. Then they pick again at 110. And I think they've addressed three needs already. They've got their quarterback in Drake May. They've got their receiver in Jalen Polk. They've got their guard, Laydon Robinson. They get to 110, and I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, okay, they need a tight end. Theo Johnson's off the board. Jatavion Sanders is off the board. Brock Bowers, of course, went in the first round. You know, the kid from Iowa on the board. Still. A.J. Barner from Michigan on the board. Cade Stover from Ohio State on the board. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe they go tight end here. They go guard again. Oh, sorry, they go receiver again at 110. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So I'm like, all right, I like that. Javon Baker, I didn't love his thing where he says that he's going to make people, he's going to play so well, paraphrasing here, that he's going to make people in wheelchairs stand up. You know, I thought that was kind of a juvenile comment. And look, I get it. The kid's like, what, 20 years old probably? How old is he? 22. All right. So, I mean, 22-year-olds say stupid shit all the time. Like, that's common. But really? Javon Baker, I'm supposed to fall in love with this pick? Like, I don't get me wrong. I think he's going to be decent. If they, you know, if he can get in the offense and be part of the system and develop kind of like he did with Jakobi Meyers, I think he could be fine. But I'm just saying, Patriots Nation is like falling in love with this dude after one press conference, and I just thought it was a little juvenile. I'm not going to pick it apart because I still think this is a good pick. But as I said, I started to get a little squirrely here because I'm thinking, we still need a tight end. We still need a tight end. I know we have Hunter Henry. I know we have Austin Hooper, but there's a lot of tight ends in this draft, and they're starting to get picked up, and they're not going to be there at 137. And lo and behold, I was right, because at 131... the Chiefs go out and they get Jared Wiley out of TCU. And I really like Jared Wiley. I think Jared Wiley is a solid player and somebody who is going to be very good. He is going to be very, very good in this league. He's 6'6". Like 245 or something wild like that. It's crazy. Oh, I should also point out that the Patriots were no longer drafting at 137. And even if they were, they had traded that pick to the Chargers to move up. They didn't get Wiley at 110. And instead, at 110, they got Javon Baker. As I just pointed out. But the Chiefs getting Jared Wiley is huge because Travis Kelce is not getting any younger and Patrick Mahomes still has at least 10 solid years of good production left in him, health willing. And so for the Chiefs to go get that after getting their tackle and getting their wide receiver, they're going to be very good for a very long time. And I am willing on April 30th to throw this out there. I think the Chiefs are going to three-peat. I do. I think, you know, they traded up. I had said with the Bills, it was with the Panthers. And that pick had belonged to the Bills. But they traded up for Xavier Worthy. They identified a talent to surround Mahomes with. Then they went and they got that tackle from BYU, who I really like. And then they go and get Jared Wiley in the fourth round. And I think Jared Wiley is going to be really good. Now, the interesting thing is, and this is my last NFL take. I mean, I could go on about the draft forever. I have one more Patriots-related nugget. But my last big take is, Travis Kelce signed a 2-year contract extension today. You know, Travis Kelce isn't getting any younger. I just mentioned that. He probably wasn't too thrilled with that draft pick. You know, I mean, it's not like Jared Wiley wasn't highly regarded. I had him as my fourth best tight end. I know that didn't turn out that way in the draft, but Jared Wiley at 131, I think, is a steal. I think he has raw instincts. He's 6'6", 249 pounds. He's only 23 years old. He played 3 years at Texas and 2 years at TCU. He's solid. First team All Big 12 last year. I mean, it's nuts. He had eight touchdowns, 520 yards on the season, 47 catches. He's a huge red zone threat. If I'm Travis Kelce, I'd be pissed. I'm a Hall of Fame tight end. I'm dating the most attractive and famous woman in the world. To some people. Just pointing that out there. And I'm going to get replaced by a fourth rounder? So, I mean, I'm just floating this out in the world. I'm not trying to be Colin Cowherd or Nick Wright or anybody like that. I'm just saying. I think Travis Kelce called up the Chiefs Saturday night and said, look, man, I've won, what is it, three Super Bowls? I've been to four. I'm dating Taylor Swift. I'm going to go to the Hall of Fame. I'm like one of the best postseason players in NFL history. I don't want to play second fill to some fourth round gear out of TCU who's younger and faster than me. I'm going to retire, or you're going to give me a contract extension. So I don't really know what to think here. You know? So I think personally, there could be nothing to this, but I find it weird. They draft this stud tight end in the fourth round who I really wanted the Patriots to get, who I think is going to be a great NFL player. He has the size and the speed and the quickness and the agility. Really wanted him to play in Foxborough. Chiefs go get him at pick 131. I think they draft him to be Travis Kelce's replacement. I mean, now at the worst case scenario, you have this guy for probably 3 or 4 years. You have Travis Kelce now for another 4 years, even if he's older. I mean, those two, you can only cover one of them. So it's very early, but I'm already scared. I think the Chiefs are going to three-peat, which is going to be gross. But just throwing that out there. On April 29th, you can book it here, bookmark it. I think the Chiefs are going to three-peat. You can't stop that offense. The only people stopping that offense is Kadarius Toney. All right. So, yeah. Patriots do eventually get their tight end at pick 231, Jaheim Bell. I think that's a good value pick. He's solid. I don't think he's going to be a superstar like he could be. Wiley could be. But the most interesting draft is there were a lot of quarterbacks still hanging around late. But at pick 193, the Patriots grabbed Joe Milton. And at that point, what's his name there from Kentucky, Devin Leary, who I used to really like, was still on the board. And I'm not sure if, I think the Tulane quarterback was still available. I don't know if the Florida State guy was still hanging around, but there were some options if the Patriots wanted to grab a second quarterback. They went out and they got Joe Milton from Tennessee. Joe Milton's nicknamed Bazooka Joe. He threw an orange like 90-something yards or 70-something yards, apparently, on TikTok. I missed that. That one slipped by me. But Joe Milton is he's a project. That's the word you've heard about Joe Milton, but I like the pick. I do. There's really no risk here. I mean, there's just not. I mean, there were some players on the board after that I would have liked. I liked the running back from New Hampshire. I liked the tackle from UCF, Tylan Grable, who went. You know, there was the kicker from Alabama who went at 203, Will Reichard. Made a lot of huge kicks in his life. He's also missed one huge kick in his life. But I like him better than Chad Ryland. So, I mean, there were some players I did like still left when the Patriots went for Joe Milton. You know, they had got their corner from South Carolina, that Dial kid or whatever his name is. They got another guard. So they had filled some other positions of need. But Joe Milton, I'll take it. I mean, why not? And a lot of people have asked me what I think about Drake May. You know, and I do want to get to some NBA and NHL stuff quickly before I close out. But, you know, my ultimate Drake May take can be summed up in about a minute. And it's quite simple. Drake May is drafted to be the future, but the future doesn't need to be the present. Right? Like, I had a nice, cute little quip when about Mac Jones, that he's always going to be your reality quarterback and not your fantasy quarterback. That's what I always used to say about Mac Jones. Well, the reality is he's not on the team anymore. So they had to do something different. And with Drake May, I think he can be your future. He doesn't need to be your present. They don't need to throw him into the wolves with rookie wide receivers and rookie offensive linemen and a first-year head coach and a first-year offensive coordinator. They don't need to do that. But I think adding Joe Milton and having Jacoby Brissett in the building and the Canadian kid and maybe even Bailey Zappi at minicamp or at OTAs or whatever, I think that's good for Drake May. Have him be a sponge. Have him develop physically. Because the thing is, I don't think Drake May has played his best football yet. You know, my overarching take is that he doesn't need to be your present, but he can be your future. That's because I don't think he's played his best football yet. I think Jane Daniels might have peaked last year. I think Michael Penix has certainly peaked. By the time he gets on the field in Atlanta, he might be 30 years old. Bo Nix, He's been in college football for forever. I like the guy, but maybe he's played his best football. I don't think Drake May has played his best football yet. You know, he's younger. He's a younger quarterback. He's not small at all. He's a younger quarterback. He's 21 years old. He's got time. We don't need to turn Drake May into the face of the franchise in October. He could be the face of the franchise in October of 2026 when the Patriots are 5-1 and, you know, we're hosting the aging Josh Allen Buffalo Bills, you know, on Monday Night Football, and Drake May throws for 5 touchdowns and runs for 2 or whatever, something crazy like that. He can be your face of the franchise then. But for now, just let Drake May be Drake May. And I like the kid's moxie. I was never a huge fan of him in college. You know, I thought North Carolina, not a huge football school. I thought maybe he wasn't really surrounded with a lot there, so it was kind of hard to say what he was going to be. He had a really good 2022 season. I didn't think he was that great this year. Like, I wasn't really a huge Drake May guy. But once the Patriots became a really bad team last year and it was clear they were going to get a quarterback, I wasn't rooting for them to lose so they could get Jane Daniels over Drake May or this guy over that guy, because I thought you're going to have an opportunity to draft somebody that you can actually develop to be who you want them to be. Josh Allen wasn't great in year one. Drew Brees wasn't great in year one. Patrick Mahomes didn't play his first year. You don't have to rush these things. And so that's why if you're a Patriots fan, you should be excited about Drake May. I like his makeup. I mean, he was standing up there at his press conferences with his brothers. He's the youngest of 4 brothers, all right? He's probably never owned a new shirt in his life, all right? Never had his own new car until he got to North Carolina and is drowning in NIL money. But the kids probably had to go through a lot of adversity and being the youngest of 4 brothers in an athletically talented family, there's a lot of pressure there. He also had... talks a lot about his family. He had his girlfriend there who he's been with since 7th grade. All right, that's commitment. You know, and so I like the kid's moxie. I think he's got a good makeup. He seems way more personal in front of the media than Mac Jones was. And for that reason, I don't think the moment's going to be too big for him. You know, we're now 4.5 years post Tom Brady. When Mac was here, we only a year. And so there was a lot of pressure. Oh, I'm Tom Brady's replacement. There's not a lot of pressure to be Mac Jones' replacement, all right? You can only really go up from here. Like, I don't think it's going to get worse than it was last year and the year before with the dysfunction. So I hope the Patriots build around Drake May. I think they're doing that. And I think they give, I hope they give him a real shot, because they didn't give Mac Jones a real shot. All right, speaking of real shots, I'm running out of time here, but I want to touch quickly. I had some NBA talk. You know, my, I'll sum up my NBA talk in 30 seconds. I think Kevin Durant and Paul George aren't actually clutch and that they're overrated. I've always thought that, but, you know, as time goes on, you know, Phoenix Suns get eliminated and, you know, KD's going to have to find another, KD's going to have to find another place to go win a title, because he's not going to win one there. Paul George has always been disappointing, and so these things, I'm not really concerned about the NBA, but I will just say the aging superstar is something that I'm not really a fan of right now, because some of these guys are just hanging around, I think, a little bit past their expiration date. You know, like, the Clippers tied the series. They're in it. But, you know, I think about some of these aging superstars that I really just don't want Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to be those guys. I don't want to be sitting here in 5 or 6 years talking about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown the same way I feel about Kevin Durant and Paul George. So that's my NBA take. All right. Eventually, you got to be Paul Pierce or you got to be Kevin Durant, and you have to be a veteran that gets over the hump. You have to, and you know, I hate the super teams, but and these guys have been a part of them, and some of them have, KD's won on a super team, but sometimes you just have to do that to win, right? To change your legacy. But I just look at some of these aging superstars that are just on the back nine and clearly aren't the same player they were. Think about Chris Paul. Think about Kevin Durant. LeBron's probably going to go somewhere. He might go back to Cleveland for a third time next year. So all that, I just really hope Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown don't become that. All right. Speaking of superstars that are aging, Brad Marchand has absolutely taken over this series with the Toronto Maple Leafs. All right. This is really what I want to stick here. Because we just saw the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin, who I would say is the most talented player of my generation, call it 2004 to present, post-lockout. I think he's the most talented player. McDavid will be there. Sidney Crosby is the most accomplished player. But I think all in all, the whole package, Ovechkin's been a winner, and he's also has the stats to prove it. But we saw him get knocked out 4-0 in a sweep with the Rangers. They dominated. And so a lot of people have been talking about these aging superstars. Crosby's Penguins couldn't keep it together this year. But Brad Marchand has taken over. He's 35 years old, all right? He's playing against Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and this John Tavares and all this high-flying offense down there, and he looks like the best player on the ice. He does. He does. He's amazing. He's, what, 9 points in the series? He's absolutely taking over. And in my opinion, he's a first-ballot Hall of Famer. I don't give a rat's ass, no pun intended, about his antics. I think he's matured beyond that. He hasn't had a suspension, I don't think, since 2021. So it's been a long time. Been 3 years, which for Brad is a long time. Maybe I'll check that later. But we'll have a lot to talk about no matter how this series goes. The Bruins are up 3-1 right now, but I think one of the reasons why they're playing so well is because of Brad Marchand. You know, I thought maybe in game two he didn't look great, but he's taken over in game 3 and 4. He's gone up there and made Leafs fans have nightmares. And I think you look around the NHL, there's a lot of aging talent still in the playoffs. Tyler Seguin, Joe Pavelski, you know, you go around the league, Anze Kopitar, but here in Boston, it's Brad Marchand's team. It's Brad Marchand's world, and we're living in it. And what an example to set for David Pastrnak and, you know, Charlie McAvoy and the other guys who are going to be that next group. They're already there, but now they get to see Brad. They saw Zdeno Chara. They saw Patrice Bergeron. So with Brad Marchand, I think the Bruins have something special here. Now, as far as the series is concerned, I'm recording this on Monday night. They play Game 5 in Boston on Tuesday. I would not, in my wildest dreams, feel comfortable if you're a Bruins fan after last year, after 2010, after any of these years. I don't want to play a game seven at the Garden. I don't, because even though you've done well against the Leafs in game sevens, you know, in the last decade, you haven't done that well against everybody else. The Blues, the Capitals, the, you know, the Florida Panthers, the Montreal Canadiens, all these teams who have come into the Garden on game seven and won. I don't love it. I hate it. It scares me. So I don't want anything to do with it. I want the Bruins to take care of business. They need to win tomorrow night. And if they win, it's going to be the same formula. There's a lot of talk about a Austin Matthews illness of some kind. I wouldn't count that out yet. I mean, really, this is the kind of thing where Austin Matthews has a Michael Jordan-esque flu game. They win. Now they're only down 3-2. They're going home. You get to watch all the jabronis in the parking lot there jump around for game six. That scares me a little bit. I don't want a game seven. After last year, after the past, take care of business tomorrow night. The formula is simple. Be good on the penalty kill. They have been. Capitalize on chances. They have been. And ride Swayman. Ride Swayman. I want Linus Ullmark to be fresh in case something happens to Swayman. But right now, you don't mess with what's good. And Swayman has absolutely dominated the Leafs this year. You ride him and then you take it on a game-by-game basis. But you got to ride him right now. That's the formula. Good PK, good defense, sound structure, ride Swayman. If you do that, you're going to face the Florida Panthers next round, probably. And then you'll get your rematch that everybody wants and doesn't want at the same time. All right, speaking of wanting and not wanting at the same time, I'd love to stick around and give more takes, but closing in on 40 minutes here, and just want to keep the podcasts nice and tight and clean. Wanted to get to the Sox, but I don't think I'm going to have time. Wanted to get the Major League Baseball and Mike Trout's resurgence, if you can even call it that. He's a Hall of Fame player, but I don't think I'm going to have time for that. But next week, we'll dive into baseball. The Sox keep hanging around in the standings. Do I buy in? I'll let you know later in the week. Also, Portland has a new pro soccer team, the Hearts of Pine. I'll give you my thoughts on that development. But that's going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. We'll be back later in the week with another pod. Hope you have a great rest of your week. As always, you can follow us on socials at Home Field Pod and on and please like, share, and subscribe, of course, wherever you listen to podcasts. But until next time, my name is Will Hyland. It's April 30th, 2024, and you've been listening to Home Field Advantage.